Welcome to the Sales Chaos Theory Podcast, the go-to audio experience for navigating the ever-evolving landscape of sales conversations. Hosted by the dynamic duo Tim Ojai and Brian Lambert, this is your invitation to dive deep into the world of value communication like never before. In a market flooded with unpredictability and constant change, Sales Chaos Theory is your guiding light, offering insights, strategies, and the much-needed clarity to help you find the patterns and thrive amidst the mayhem. This is Sales Chaos Theory, where we make sense of the complexity in the market and help you lean into it to rise above the fray and land more deals. Let's dive in.
With the flood of junk mail, cold calling, and feeble interactions that customers have had to endure for years now, quality sales professionals have to work harder than ever before to find a way to be relevant. We would go so far as to say that being relevant to customers is the biggest challenge for sales reps today. And we've got to ask, what are you going to do about it? Well, that's what we're going to be talking about today. We'll be exploring the most important anchor points that you need to make sure are not only in place, but consistently in place. Being able to identify and use these anchor points will not only help you identify breakdowns in your relevance, but drive massive improvements in your sales results.
The Sales Chaos Podcast starts now.
Hello, friends. Welcome to the Sales Chaos Podcast. My name is Tim Ojai.
And I'm Brian Lambert.
And we are the authors of the book Sales Chaos, Using Agility Selling to Think and Sell Differently. Thank you for joining us. We're always looking for ways to help people who must rise to the challenge of responding to their company's business and sales strategy. If you are responsible to drive more valuable customer relationships with the right people at the right level in the customer's organization, you need to master the conversations that are the fuel of these interactions so you can be a more effective and trusted seller.
Well, let's get started on exploring that, shall we?
Cool. Go for it.
All right. I remember a time when I was about 5 years into sales, and we had this huge rebranding effort inside of the Fortune 500 company that I was working with, which is fine, no big deal, it changes the logo. But for us in sales, it became something much, much bigger. We actually had to go through a certification process, and this certification process was about how to talk about the company. And since we're talking about relevance today here on this podcast, let me just share with you the outcomes of this exercise. We had to go through a PowerPoint scripted presentation of about 12 slides. We had a specific way to introduce each slide, and we had to explain the company and the quote-unquote value that the company would get, the customer would get from hearing us and interacting with us. So basically, I had to take my 12-point PowerPoint and give it to each client and had to do it the exact same way. So being new to sales for about the first, in my first 5 years, I thought this was going to work. Well, lo and behold, it didn't work. And basically in sales, we're like, after a couple of weeks of this going, you know, they're expecting us to treat every single customer the same way. We're all sounding exactly alike, which is the certification checklist that everybody on the manager side signed. And then, you know what? We had manager teams flying around and coaching. Our sales kickoff was dedicated to this how we're going to talk to people type focus. And the executive team all got up there and was all happy that we were all going to sound the same way. And we were just kind of scratching our heads like, great, they've made us into sales robots. And how is this relevant to customers?
And you got certified in this approach?
Yeah, I got certified into this approach. I had to get signed off by a panel of three people. One was a role play buyer, so we would all go in one-on-one. Two managers would score us out on a scoring sheet. And, we all passed. But then when we go fast forward to the marketing leaders that I had to talk to, nobody wanted to talk to me again after I gave them that pitch. In fact, I wasn't invited back to three people. And at the end of our call and at the end of my scripted talk, they all said, thank you very much. And we'll be in touch. And
so are you saying the only reason you got in access to those people was because of the logo you represented?
Yep. Yeah, that's the only reason. And it was like, let me tell you about us and how cool we are. And I got certified to talk to you in this very scripted way. And look at this PowerPoint. and this one, 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 12 times. And next steps are, let's talk about you. Tell me about you now. And they're like,
oh my gosh.
No. Let's not talk about me, and why don't you leave?
So, that's brutal.
Yeah,
that's brutal. Totally. My story is actually, not quite as intense, but the same result. I remember once flying to a client's main headquarters with one of my teammates to try and crack open the relationship that we had with them, and we wanted to take it to an entirely new level. And we'd set up a really warm 30-minute meeting with one of the direct reports of a senior executive that I had worked with in the past. And we were trying to break open an entirely new kind of channel of offering to this organization. And we were going to present our value proposition. Man, it was painfully awkward. We spent the entire time just trying to ask questions to generate a good discussion. And the guy we were talking with literally did not want to talk to us. He wanted to be able to tell his boss, yes, I met with your people. But it was absolutely a stonewall. He didn't have any needs. He didn't have any questions. He didn't have any even deep responses to what we were trying to talk about. And we completely failed. It was wow. One of the most irrelevant conversations I probably ever had as a sales professional. And it was just a classic mistake.
And you flew all the way there to be irrelevant?
Thankfully, I had other meetings with my teammate. I had flown him out for 30 minutes.
30 minutes.
And he flew back.
Oh, man.
It was horrible.
Both of those stories, interestingly enough, are in the name of delivering the quote-unquote value proposition. And both of them ended horribly for us.
Yeah, they are. And so that's the thing, right? So I want to ask the audience, have you ever had the same kind of situation where you're trying to generate a conversation and you're absolutely not able to be relevant to your customers?
Yeah, because if you have had some struggle with that, you're not alone, as Tim and I just shared. But also, in the research that we've had with both sellers and buyers, we find that the core problem is that oftentimes as value communicators, we've got to work in a different way. We have to somehow unpack our company's value and be able to communicate that in a new way. What we mean by that is what you have done in the past to get here to where you've been able to actually have a meeting may not work when you get in front of the folks these days. And that's because for a variety of different reasons, whether it's technology has evolved, or perhaps your customers have evolved, it's this idea of relevance and what does it mean. And I think a classic trap that salespeople fall into is what's worked in the past, let's keep going to that same approach. And you've got to be in tune with customers enough to know when it's time to change your approach so you don't fall into that trap and keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, because we all know that's the definition of insanity, according to Albert Einstein. So you got to change your approach as a sales pro in a genuinely different way. Isn't that right, Tim?
Absolutely. So that's what we're going to spend the rest of this podcast talking about. We want to dive into one core principle that drives working in a different way and then give you five ways to apply it. So let's start with this idea of approaching customers and being relevant. And the hardest thing to understand is that most sellers don't prepare much differently than spending all their time working really hard to put together a core message and then sending out emails or phone calls or whatever, trying to generate that one chance that we can dump your message on the customer. And even worse, you've got other people who are trying to shove their stuff into the conversation. Think of like marketing decks that no one wants to use, or Brian's example of the new pitch. This creates a massive disconnect with the customer, who frankly doesn't care about the message at all. And if they did care, they usually don't have time to even set up a meeting in the first place. And one of the core kind of patterns underneath this is that there's all this work around trying to define your product or your service. We call it being product-centric, but we're also including people who sell services in this definition, where everything that you're wrapped up in preparing to talk about is this idea of having your features and benefits clearly defined, trying to identify a need so you can position your offering as a solution. All of that is what we would call product-centric, and we're saying that is actually the wrong design point and it's the wrong approach.
Yeah, and this might be a little bit hard here, especially if you're a student of sales and have read all the solution selling books and have really spent time understanding how to ask open-ended questions. We totally get the impact of what Tim just said. And the reason why we're saying this is a lot of the effort, and just think about this, a lot of the effort that you've gone through inside your company, if you have any support at all, has been to understand your core value. And that's why this is such a slippery slope, because we have to understand the value of our solution, whether it's a product or a service. And more importantly, we have to be able to communicate it. That's why we're in the role of being a value communicator. But interestingly enough, and this is the key point that we're trying to make here, is you do not get to define in what is valuable. You do not get to define what is valuable. Your customer does. And, you know, we're here to tell you, they don't want to talk about your stuff. And you've got millions of dollars being spent inside of major companies, all orchestrated around talking about their stuff. And when we talk about flipping this around and moving off of this product-centric view, what we're talking about is working backwards from the conversation that customers want to have, the one that they're really trying to understand from you as a seller, as a value communicator, is what you know about them, their world, and more importantly, the problems that they're solving. So what we're talking about is spending time on crafting questions in a more meaningful way of understanding your customer in more insightful ways and really thinking about how they work and shifting this mindset from a product centric view, product centric, solution centric view, to one that is more about the problem. In essence, a problem centric view. Now, you might want to wordsmith us and say, well, those are not problems that customers have. Those are opportunities. Isn't that right, Tim?
Oh my gosh, killing me. But yeah, to the seller.
Yeah, to the seller, they're opportunities. But we're here to tell you, customers have problems. And in today's selling landscape and buying landscape, the salespeople that understand customer problems and communicate some of the impact of those problems and be able to meet customers even 10% of the way, 15% of the way, not even halfway on this journey to understanding the problem that customers face, they will be different to the customer and they will be able to gain access and have conversation. Your job is not to be a product pusher. Now, go take an inventory of your conversation and listen to yourself. What are you really talking about? And your job is to switch that conversation to being a professional problem solver. And problem solving, in our opinion, it's not only relevant, but it's also sexy. It's going to make you a lot of money, and it's going to help you position yourself differently to your customers. So when you start talking with your customers, even prospects, about the problems that they're trying to overcome, think about how awesome those problems are and stop thinking about how awesome you are or how awesome your products are. And that's when that relevance will start kicking in.
This is such a huge concept. I can tell you in our own practice of what we do and when we coach sellers and work with organizations to transform their conversations, this idea of starting at the conversation and working backwards and anchoring it against this idea of understanding the problems and challenges that customers are trying to address completely changes not only your definition of your role, but all the activities you're going to go do. So I'm hoping actually that as you're listening to Brian and I talk, this makes total sense to you, that you get this, maybe even get this already. So let's give you some practical ways that we have found that really fine tune and drive home this concept. We want to give you five actions that essentially transform and turn a concept into tangible action for you. All right, so the first one we want to talk about is break down this idea of working from the conversation backwards into how you prepare for that first conversation inside your head. It's about building a tailored point of view. It's about taking time to research a customer as an individual at the minimum. Look for them on the internet. Look for them on LinkedIn. Try to find out anything you can about that individual so that you can try to understand what it is that they're trying to address, at least from a likelihood perspective, and figure out what are the pressures, what are the challenges, what are the trends that are affecting them in their role at their organization that's getting in the way of them achieving success that they must deliver And sometimes you can literally find it on their company website, what their likely outcome is supposed to be. And you can ping people that you know, perhaps at that customer's location, but try to figure out what it is that they're trying to achieve and then what's getting in the way of that. Guaranteed, if you can come into that scenario and start talking with them, with having done your homework first, you're going to change even the very beginning of how you're perceived.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the biggest pivot that we see with this idea of tailored point of view is not doing account planning at the account level. It's doing, you know, problem planning at the individual level, coming up with a point of view about that individual, not a point of view about your product. You know, my point of view is they need to buy my stuff. No, that's about you. I'm talking about, if you're talking to a marketer, what's their point of view? What's the point of view you're going to have about that marketer in their role and the challenges that they're facing, right? So that's the key pivot there. The second thing that we want to share with you as something to try is find ways to personally connect with the right buyer. Now, in this context, we're talking about individuals again. So anytime you hear the word buyer from Tim or I, we're talking about individuals with faces, names, backgrounds, experiences, skills, and different areas of focus inside of a company. And what we got to do for this thing to try is encourage you to get to the right buyer. Now, who is the right buyer, and which is that role? Which person is that? If you ask folks inside your company the identification of right, you're probably going to end up with 14 different answers, and eventually everybody's just going to say, "We'll talk to the CEO or talk to a C-level executive." But that might not be right for you. So who is your right buyer, and how do you know, and how would you communicate to us that that is indeed the right person? And then with that right person in mind, how are you going to personally connect with them? In this case, it might have to be over email, it might have to be over voicemail, it might be face-to-face, but how are you going to make a connection with that individual? Not in the old way of building a relationship, or asking them to dinner. We all know that doesn't work anymore. For us, though, here, it's a shift to personally connecting around the problem and sharing that point of view that you've developed, the insights that you've gained over time, and offering it out to that customer as something to engage in order to add some sort of value in that personal connection. So it's not about you. It's not about your account. It's about the person, and it's about bringing something that's beyond the obvious from your point of view and sharing with that person in a way that's relevant to them through a variety of different methods, a variety of different modalities, if you will, that oftentimes lead to them engaging with you over time in a dialogue, kind of an asynchronous dialogue that's relevant to them. And you establish credibility and, of course, relevance. What's the next one, Tim?
Well, let me just pause on that. You bring up such a huge concept in this idea of not identifying somebody because of their job title or buying authority, but identifying somebody as the person you want to talk to because of their relationship to the problem. So we like to use the phrase problem owner. Whoever owns the problem is probably the most senior person you're going to talk to. If that problem is not a priority for them, why are you trying to connect with them? How relevant do you think you're going to be? That's a huge concept. I just want to make sure we don't miss that, because it's massive. Because most people, Brian, how many times have we seen it? Here's the profile of a CMO. Here's the profile of a CTO or a CFO or whatever,
right? CEO,
or an IT director or a VP of HR. It's not about that job title. It's about the problems that they're trying to solve and the priorities that those problems have. That's what drives relevant conversations.
Yeah, and I really appreciate this reminder, because it's like, oh, well, you need to go talk to the CEO. Okay, let me wave my magic wand and put you in front of the CEO. What are you going to say? What are you going to talk about? And what problem do they need to solve? What's their role as a CEO in solving that problem, versus a VP of sales who also is trying to solve the same problem of revenue growth, for example? Yeah. Can you, as a seller, identify the differences between those two roles and help them work together. Awesome. Thanks for that reminder. Good stuff.
No, cool. But that opens the door to our third thing, and that's around how you actually have relevant meetings. So when you finally connect with somebody and it's the person that is trying to address the problem that you're able to help them with, and bring insight and hopefully even a solution to that, you've got to have relevant meetings. But relevant meetings isn't just defined by, you know, warm fuzzies. Right? Relevant meetings are not just defined by how well you walked in the door and the respect you were able to generate. Relevant meetings is about how you are able to navigate that problem and bring all the different people into the discussion at different points and deal with them appropriately. Some people are absolutely in charge of dealing with the problems. Many times there's just usually one person, but there can be two people trying to own the problem, and that can create conflict. I think of the struggles that are happening now between the CFO's organization and the CIO's organization. What's happening in business, you're seeing CFOs take over a lot of what used to be the CIO's stuff, and you're creating a lot of tension. So when we say have a relevant meeting, it's not just find one person and have great conversations with that one person. It's really trying to navigate the bigger problem, figure out how it's structured, and realize the problem may have many different heads. Part of it may be, hey, we need to increase productivity. But the other part of it may be, hey, we need to manage internal politics. And it's all one problem. It's all connected. We use the phrase, it's a wicked problem. It's an actual technical term out there, but it's a problem that's so complex that when you try to just shove a solution into it, you're only going to make the complexity worse.
That's right. Yep. And so this idea of several meetings over time is critical. It's not just one meeting at a time. And how are you going to build that experience with multiple problem folks in the problem network, if you will, that have a piece to bring to the table in order to tackle that problem? And then how do you manage those meetings over time in order to help that company actually work together differently and to help those people add value to each other through the sales process? And I think there's not enough thinking around that, which is why this is a great thing to try. You know, think through your role in helping your customers actually talk to each other. Through the meetings that you're running, what would that look like and what could that look like? The fourth thing here, the fourth thing to try is actually spend the time to create a definition of success with your customer and with your customers, plural, if you're engaged in a bigger problem network where there's multiple stakeholders. For the purpose of this exercise and this ask of us to you, I'd like you to think about what role are you playing personally. And what role is your company playing in making that customer successful? When you identify all of the folks in the problem network and you're thinking about having meetings with them, how are you going to help them evolve their individual thinking to a point where they're having a shared mindset and a shared definition of what success looks like now in the short term, but also in the long term? And the definition of success here is not buy my stuff. You know, I will have achieved our definition of success when they sign the bottom line. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about in the pursuit of the problem, there's an outcome that they want to tackle. And we break that into three different things. One, they're expecting some sort of ongoing impact and they genuinely want to change how they're working. So what's your role and your company's role in helping them achieve that ongoing impact? How would you articulate that definition of success? The second way is to think through the one-time result they're going to achieve by working with you. Whether it's a project, a short-term, long-term project, what's the one-time result that you're going to be able to deliver? Or maybe it's a set of metrics, a set of deliverables, a set of outcomes that equal a one-time result to them in their mind. And again, can you get folks unified to achieve that result? The third area that we see here for definition of success is this idea of driving tasks with folks and being able to achieve those tasks, whether it's running report or whatever. And on top of all that are really two key focuses for your customer. One is optimizing all that to achieve some sort of status quo or some sort of managed state. And then the second, kind of the holy grail in sales opportunities, is more of a transformational effort where those ongoing impacts, results, and tasks are aligned to transform perhaps a process, a workflow, or even the company. So thinking through those elements kind of in a three-dimensional way of what the how the problem needs to get tackled over time, how you get started in that tackling that problem and how you align all those stakeholders. That's what we mean by a definition of success here. And most salespeople that Tim and I talk to, you know, they can't articulate any of this. They can't articulate what the customer's definition of success is. And it's really hard to be relevant when you can't talk about making your customers successful.
And I want to underscore what you said just now about that whole concept of optimizing versus transforming. That's massive, because a lot of times we go in thinking, man, we can really help you. We can really make a major difference in your organization, your company. And if the company is not prepared to transform, don't sell a transformational value proposition. Sell an optimizing one. Take your time. Build the relationship over time. Create influence. Create the kind of trusted advisor status that customers will eventually rely on when it's time to transform. Because everybody at some point has to go through a transformation journey, especially in today's modern economy.
Yep.
So the last thing we want you to focus on is this idea of taking the final conversation around making the value tangible and breaking it down into what really is required, not only to close the business, but to actually generate and deliver the kind of value that you promised you would. So you have to have a clear business case. You have to have a clear understanding of the math involved, especially if you're in B2B sales working with what is increasingly becoming normal, working with the finance organization who has to bless everybody's deal. Finance is all about the ROI, and they're all about the business case of what they're trying to do based on not just the present reality, but the future priorities that the company is trying to go through. So when you think about what it takes to negotiate or close, don't just close with the one person you've got the strongest relationship with. Focus on the problem that this organization is trying to deal with, the challenge, whatever you want to call it, and present it now as the opportunity to optimize or transform and build the business case that shows the alternative to not using you is worse. Using you must be the best choice possible. And if they have an alternative that is equal to or better than the value that you're offering, they're not going to close with you, period. So you've got to find a way to communicate and translate your offering as a tangible value. And that includes a really solid plan for execution. Don't just close and walk away. Make sure you're partnering with whoever you need to partner with on your own team to bring them to the table or to represent their point of view on the execution part of this. Because if your promise does not get executed, the customer will never work with you again.
Yeah, that's great. Great input. And that's why this is an important thing to try. Because, you know, here's a real world story. I was in the midst of a long sales cycle, and we were coming down to the end, and we knew that the customer knew that we were going to go forward, and we had a meeting, and he goes, so got it. This is great. We're super excited. So tell me, what's going to happen in week two? And I was just like, he's like, yeah, time to move on to, let's figure out how we're going to make this work, shall we? I'm like, yeah, thanks, man. He's like, I get it. You're a salesperson. Your job's to close me. But you know what, Brian? It's just getting started for me.
Yeah.
So get your team together and get your rear end in gear. Got it. Loud and clear, buddy. I hear you. we had that that kind of relationship where we could do that, right, and have that conversation. But yeah, from a customer's perspective, it's just starting. It's game on for them, not over. And I think that's that customer-centric view. Great stuff, Tim. So there you go. There's the five things to try. The first was build a tailored point of view. The second was personally connect with the right buyer. The third was having relevant meetings, especially meetings over time, creating a definition of success that your customer agrees to so you can articulate that definition of success. And then the fifth one, perhaps the most difficult, make that value tangible with your customer. And then, you know what, there's one more thing that we'd love for you to do. We'd love for you to ask us questions. And we're serious about that. Drop your question in the comments section. Honestly, we really, really want to be part of the community here where you can actually find value. And we want you to ask those questions, not only for yourself, but do us a favor. We're often learning from you guys as well. This part of the approach that we have, We're always learning. Tim and I talk every single day, and we're dealing with stuff like this. We'd love to include you in that conversation. So when you ask a question, you create a dialogue not only for us, but for other people to leverage as well. It helps us all.
Great. So in summary, if you want to drive relevance into your customer interactions, design those interactions from the conversation backwards. Start by understanding the individual you're trying to be relevant to. Focus on solving their problems. Then you can break your sales cycle into five different conversations that Brian just outlined and literally design all of your sales activities based on what would make those conversations successful. Let me say that again. Design all of your sales activities based on what would make those conversations successful. If you're spending time on anything else but those five conversations, I would not consider that a sales activity. So that's it for today. And on behalf of Brian and myself, we invite your thoughts and comments and your feedback. Remember, friends, tips and tricks don't save the world. You need to find your own way to communicate value to buyers at every interaction so you can turn chaos into opportunity. Thanks for joining us today. See you next time.
Thanks, everybody. Take care and good selling.
Thank you for listening.